This podcast is intended for an adult audience. But we're not the podcast police, so figure out your own shit, Skyler.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 288. Science Faction, the most interesting science stories of 2018.
Wow, we really are covering everything, all the great milestones.
That's right. We're skipping our intro bit, which is the origins of, because we have a great show lined up. This is going to be split across where you would normally come in on Thursday and hear I Call BS. You're going to hear the remainder of this show. We're going to have to split it up because it is so big. This is my favorite show to do every single year because we get to review not just the best science articles of this particular week, but the best science articles of the entire year.
It's big, but I think a lot of our fans think they could take it all if we were willing to give it. I mean, if we could...
It just depends how much we lube this science article.
I got a shoehorn in my trunk.
Yeah. This is my absolute favorite show we do. Every single year, we get to go back and look at the most interesting stuff, and I purposely spend a lot of research time on this particular episode, about two or three times as much as we do on a regular episode, because I want to look for the science articles that are not listed in, like, Discover Magazine's top 10 science articles of the year. Some of those will make it on here because they are just that important, but a lot of these are ones you are not going to hear on any one of those other lists, and there are ones that I'm going to try and justify to you why I think they are some of the most important science stories of 2018 and why they are very groundbreaking, some of which, including our number one story, is essentially unreported on. So we're actually going to do not just the top 10, because in looking at it, who cares about base number 10s? I found 11 very interesting articles that I think made 2018 a great year for science, and so I'm going to cover all 11
Typical
of those.
Typical fucking American. Fuck the right. Metric system. Right. No, we'll do it our own way.
These are a little bit in ascending order, though they can kind of be swapped regardless. This episode will cover from 11 down to about 6, and the rest will air on Thursday down to number 1, which again, including number 1, is essentially a story you have not heard anywhere if you do not listen to Science Faction, and it is one of the most interesting science articles of the year. That is usually the case, and we're going to talk about some very, very interesting ones you probably haven't heard of.
This episode will be released on Sunday.
Yes.
And you teasing a science article this far out in advance,
right,
like trying to entice listeners, like, guess what? This Thursday,
what's the most interesting article of number 2018?
This is insane. This is like the premise of a pickup artist, somebody who sells dick. Like, this is...
I did come here wearing a bright, flashy coat and a top hat, Damien. I am peacocking the shit out of this episode.
It's working, baby.
And speaking of your baby, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing on this wonderful day of all days, the Science Faction best of 2018?
I'm doing great. I am turned on. And it's not because you're peacocking, though. Mm-hmm. I have the vapors because we have a very sexy-voiced guest scientist.
That is true. Our guest scientist, Dr. Nick. Dr. Nick, fresh back from Antarctica. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to see you guys again.
What were you doing down there in Antarctica?
I was preparing a telescope for launch on a balloon with NASA.
And or crush an Antarctic pea.
Right. Oh, which is penguins.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually Antarctic cloaca. and of course, the shill Dr. Nick pretending to have gone to Antarctica when we all realize that it's just an ice wall keeping the oceans in.
Oh, did you actually lose that debate a year ago?
Against the flat earthers, of course. Dr. Nick is one of those shills.
Yeah, we worry about the balloons drifting off the edge.
Yeah, you don't want to show what's really out there. All right, you guys, let's settle right in and get in to the best science stories of 2018.
I was just wondering, did you want Richard Dawkins to say, I could probably phone him in. Like,
okay.
From molecules to particles, these are the best articles of 2018.
That really did phone in, that's for sure.
I'm sorry, the connection was bad. Do you want me to summon him? Is he dead?
Let's start with article number 11, opiate deaths are changing our demographics. So this is somewhat of a continuing story that has been going on at least for the past 2 or 3 years, but kind of more broadly for about the past 15 years. And this is about the continued problem with opiate deaths in America. And this is, I kind of equate this to climate change in that this is something that's so big and so drastic, but we hear about so much, we almost just ignore it. But when you look at some of the stats that came out in 2018 regarding opiate deaths in the U.S., it is staggering what these demographic changes are.
Well, the effects of opiates affect all peoples in this country, all people in America. It is hitting flyover country disproportionately hard.
You sound like you're being insulting, but it's actually very true that the rural communities.
Part is when I say they fucking deserve it. God damn it. They did this to themselves.
Rural communities tend to have much higher opiate-related deaths, much higher overdose deaths, and we're seeing this take off in the last 15 years or so. And, you know, we're going to get into some of the numbers that came out this year in 2018, but let's go back and start with how did this happen? How did we get to this point? There's a few things. One is America is uniquely vulnerable to this, and that's because of our healthcare system. Because we are one of the only first world nations without a publicly subsidized healthcare system, it's much cheaper to hand somebody a pill than to do an expensive therapy that involves a doctor. And because of that, we tend to overprescribe painkillers. So you get somebody with chronic back pain who can best be treated with physical or occupational therapy that's very expensive and they're not insured for, or you hand them an OxyContin. Which one is going to happen? It's always going to be the cheaper of the two. The second thing, starting in the 90s, is a bunch of lobbying groups basically were able to get things like opiates to be able to be prescribed by doctors for chronic pain. There is no evidence that opiates help with chronic pain. Opiates are good if you've had surgery, if you were in some kind of immediate pain like that, but chronic back pain, opiates tend to not help you at all. What they do is create an addiction. Starting in the 90s, you had these lobbying firms pushing this. Then you had big pill manufacturers who would make a lot of money by sending their pharmaceutical reps to doctors and convincing them to prescribe it. It became acceptable to prescribe it, even for things like chronic pain that they weren't useful for. And starting in around 2000, we see this uptake, where it starts in the year 2000 with about 3 opiate deaths for every 100,000 Americans. By 2016, it gets up to 13. Think of that increase. That's not a 50% increase. That's not even a 2-fold increase. You're going essentially a 4-fold from 3 all the way up to 13. This is crazy. Like, we are seeing a massive amount. Now, here's the crazier part. It's gotten worse since then.
Yeah, when you paint it in that light, yeah, it sounds bad. But, you know, there were some genuine good moments from this. Lines where fathers and sons from middle America were cutting up lines of Vicodin together and snorting
them. Just snorting them right off the table.
Finally, so a bonding experience. They can't go hunting anymore.
Here's how crazy this is. This has actually changed demographics of the United States. It is now, drug overdose deaths, specifically opiate overdose deaths, are now the number one cause of death in Americans under the age of 55. Woo! That's crazy. Last year, there were 70,000 overdose deaths. 70,000. That's bigger than car crashes and gun deaths combined. That's crazy. That starts hitting the levels of cancer deaths. This is one of the biggest killers in the United States. And out of those 70,000, just a random guess, fentanyl, which is a very strong synthetic opiate, it's only been available for a few years to the general public. I want you guys to guess how many of those 70,000 deaths were attributed to fentanyl, which has only been around for a few years.
I'll go 40,000. Why not?
My first impulse is to say $1. But
40,001?
Wait, is this Price is Right rules?
Yeah. Isn't that right, Bob Barker?
Yeah.
60,000.
I always considered myself more of a Drew Carey. No, it was 30,000. So think about that. You have all drugs combined, 70,000 deaths. 30,000 are from this one fairly obscure drug that's only been around for a few years. Meaning, if this hadn't come out, I think it was only available for medical treatment in the broader populace for since 2014 or something
like
that.
For horse operations?
Yeah. We would have 30,000 less deaths. That's crazy.
I'm kind of wondering what kind of deaths did it displace? Who was number one before?
Oh, you mean before people die? I think it's still heart disease and cancer, right? But it's only just
the
barely.
Classics.
Yeah, yeah.
Classics for a reason, okay? Yeah.
This is new Coke. some really crazy stuff is starting in 2016 and continuing up through 2017. Now, keep in mind, when you're saying, wait, why are you doing this for 2018? When we talk about 2018 studies, the newest data they can have is the year 2017. So usually you'll see things from 2016 and 2017 when we're talking about data released in 2018.
They need to collaborate with the car industry because the car industry always seems to release their cars ahead of time.
They'll release the numbers the year before in the summertime for sale prices.
Yeah, right. Why aren't we seeing the 2019 data?
This is so crazy because starting in 2016 and continuing through 2017, this has been such a problem that for the first time since World War II, life expectancy in the U.S. is going down. That's nuts. Because these people it's killing, I mean, normally when we talk about cancer, heart disease, that affects older people in the population. When we're talking about this is people under 55. The biggest demographic of people dying in this is 25 to 35. This is crazy. It's taking people out in their prime. And these are just the deaths. That's not even the other costs that we do for people who end up living, including the fact that they're usually not working because they're opiate addicts. They tend to commit a lot more crimes. Huge instances of hospitalization and police resources.
They also tend to be a lot of a large percentage of racist uncles too. So I mean,
that's true.
So I mean, take the good with the bad, man. Maybe thin into the herd.
Here's another crazy statistic. If we look back 15 years, your average heroin user started with other street drugs, meaning they started with coke or crack or other forms of opiates that were available on the street. Nowadays, your average heroin user, 80-some-odd percent of them, started with a legitimate medical prescription, which means we are not talking about people who, okay, they're addicted to heroin, but if it wasn't there, they'd be addicted to methamphetamine, or if it wasn't there, they'd be addicted to crack. These are people who were normal, regular people who had jobs and lives and families who get a prescription from their doctor, think that they are safe, start taking these pills, get addicted, and when they can't afford it anymore, they move to heroin because it's cheaper. This is so common that it has gone from that 6% 15 years ago to the norm, to 80-some-odd percent of the people who are addicted now. That's crazy, because it means that you could make a somewhat heartless argument before, hey, these drug addicts, they grew up in bad families, this was their lot in life, it would be booze, it would be something. Nowadays, it's just hitting regular people. It's terrifying.
How is it that heroin is the cheaper option? I would have expected street drugs would get, you know, drive up the price.
Oh, no, heroin's way cheaper. So what people find is they get addicted usually to OxyContin. Nowadays, sometimes there's some fentanyl issues, but mainly OxyContin and Vicodin. And for that same high that you would pay about $130 for, you can get that much worth of heroin for about $8. So it's a huge
difference.
What
a bargain.
Yeah, wow. Right?
Jeez.
It's like rolling your own cigarettes.
It's a lot like that, but, you know, with your life being ruined. Yeah, so more than 70,000 overdose deaths in 2017, mostly opiates. That's just crazy. That is huge. These numbers are gigantic. And unlike other things, unlike when we say flu deaths, which hit like 70 to 80,000 last year, which was really huge, unlike heart disease and unlike cancer and stuff, these are affecting people in their prime. The people we, by the way, need to drive the economy because they're the ones putting the work in.
I too wish people from a lot of these communities would vote for needle exchange programs. Drug education, drug intervention.
Totally.
Better education.
Or, you know, just the stopping of prescribing drugs to normal people for things that aren't necessary and the monitoring of it much better. You know, we see people who get a prescription for a painkiller that's very legitimate after a very serious surgery, but it gets refilled a dozen times. They're 2 years out from the surgery and they're still getting these pills. It's a huge problem. And sadly, the numbers, the early numbers from 2018 look like it's getting worse and not better.
You know, with all these like old holistic medicines, you know, that people, I'm surprised that like there isn't walk it off therapy and it's just like an old football coach saying, yeah, your knee hurts, walk it off, drink water.
So that one is huge for a lot of reasons. It obviously is a huge epidemic here in the United States. It's spreading to other places. Canada is also seeing a big uptick in this. It's becoming a killer of our people. It is a huge problem. And what's funny is as things like car crash deaths, which used to be up around 70,000, but now thanks to seatbelts and airbags and better driving and all that, is now down into like just over 30,000. As that's dropping, and as Tesla cars are probably going to make that drop down to triple digits at some point, during that process, we are making up those deaths elsewhere. You know, it's almost like we're not being killed by the big metal beasts anymore, so we're going to do it to ourselves.
Are we going
to
complain about population control or are we not? Like listen, every time we take a step forward, you're like, no, this is a health crisis, blah, 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 right. Pandemic this.
So very, very somewhat sad news, but that is certainly one of the biggest science stories of 2018. On to article number 10, the replacement of the European peoples and then the British, sometimes a complete replacement. So this was published in Nature in April. We covered this one pretty extensively. Very, very interesting one that has to do with ancient DNA, which we're going to have another ancient DNA one, hint, hint, later on. But this ancient DNA one looked at different skeletons from 10,000 years or so ago to about 2,000 years ago, all throughout Europe.
And found that consistently teeth have been terrible on that fucking
absolutely.
Island.
Absolutely. What they found was that Europe, or Europeans as we know them, aren't really Europeans. So the first thing that happened is starting around 7,000 years ago, there was a replacement of most of the natives of Europe with farmers coming in from the Caspian Sea region, from the steppe areas. They brought with them farming technology, but they also brought with them
a love of boiling meats.
Yes, absolutely. Probably some better war techniques that involved horseback. They brought a lot of this stuff in, and they basically replaced a significant percentage of the European hunter-gatherers. There was a few infusions of this. We think there was one that it was related to agriculture, one that was related to domesticated animals. But between those two infusions of Near East DNA, almost all of the European hunter-gatherer DNA in mainland Europe, especially central mainland Europe, goes away. There's still some hangers-on of those hunter-gatherer peoples of Europe in the very northern areas in like Scandinavia, in places like the British Isles, and in the far west. Then, about 4,500 years ago, there's these people that we call the Beaker culture, which are basically in the Iberian Peninsula.
And they're mainly comic relief to Bunsen's culture.
That's exactly correct. Hilarious voices, though. We call them that because they make these specific clay beakers. And they spread from there up into the Britain area.
Are all these populations you're talking about Homo sapien?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And has been for a very long time at this point. And so as they come and they spread in, what we now realize is this beaker culture, which we see in the Iberian Peninsula, is an infusion of these farmers slash pastoralists from the Near East who came in and settled in Central Europe. They then move about 4,500 years ago into the Iberian Peninsula. They create this thing we call the beaker culture, and they expand from there into the British Isles, where they replace 90% of the native population. Not only that, they replace essentially 100% of the males. So the only people that survive, the only genetics that survive seem to be female genetics. There's no Y chromosomes that used to be in hunter-gatherer populations of the British Isles. They are completely replaced. And so what this leaves us with is a picture of what we call Europeans. They're basically Middle Easterners who only very recently came to Europe.
Yeah, when you said Iberian Peninsula, I picture a lot of swarthy Latin lovers
right.
coming and like we can't compete with the way they use the mayor. They go down on lady parts. We can't compete with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It gives a whole new meaning to the no true Scotsman fallacy, right? Because there's no true Scotsman. They're mainly mixed in with mainly people from the Middle East or even more Central Europe, but. It tells a really interesting story. It also makes me, like, I want to publish this on all the white power websites. Like, they're not that European. You were African a lot longer than you were European, and you were actually Middle Eastern a lot longer than you were European, too.
I'm picturing a couple years from now, Bobby's blonde, pasty ass is sitting in front of Congress answering questions. Is it true that you've made over 87,000 posts on a white power website? Just answer the question.
Yeah, I was mocking them. I told you.
That'll be enough. I'd like to end this line of questioning.
Very interesting. I love these stories because they're only just starting to come out. We're going to cover another one of them a little bit later in this, but it was only recently that we've been able to pull ancient DNA. Ancient DNA is much harder to do than modern DNA. It's very hard to get ancient DNA samples, especially uncontaminated ones. It's hard to get a good DNA profile, and only in the past few years has it become possible. And then that means that only in the past year or two have we been able to do these massive studies where we look at numerous individuals and their ancient DNA and can compare them. So this is really cutting-edge stuff, but it's painting this picture of how the world came to be. And it's a picture we didn't know. If you were to talk to somebody 55 years ago, even a relatively good archaeologist, they'd say, yeah, people probably moved around. You had the Gauls, and they were interacting with the Romans, and you had this stuff. But basically, people are where they've been for a decent amount of time, 30, 40,000 years. Not true at all. The people that occupied Europe originally are essentially completely gone. And we've seen this type of replacement before. We see this type of stuff later on with Genghis Khan in the 1200s, where his lineage almost completely replaces all of those in Asia. What we think of as the quote-unquote modern world is that way because of a lot of movements and recent events. And who we think of as people who've been where they are for a very long time usually have not been. All right, on to article number 9, the 9th most interesting article of 2018, the doomsday clock moves closer to midnight.
Just off title alone, that should have been the most. Like, I genuinely want to hear what you have to say. That's something that doesn't come often.
Right, the doomsday clock, it sounds like a supervillain, like, thing. Like, they're like, I'm just waiting till doomsday.
Yeah, I feel like it's something you see in obscure sci-fi movies. Definitely right. Thinking some Strangelove vibes here.
You found my doomsday clock. Did I leave my door unlocked? I must leave.
Yeah, Strangelove is actually a really good analogy because this is the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and they have this thing they call the doomsday clock, which is basically how close we are to midnight is the analogy is how close we are to the destruction of humanity or the people on the Earth. For the most part, this has been done, again, because it's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, in relation to nuclear war. That's when this started in the 50s. And so what it is usually really, really smart people who are very advanced in their particular field, which is nuclear physics or something along these lines, are put in charge of this particular organization, and they get together and decide how dangerous is the world for human beings given the current circumstances.
But specifically as it pertains to nuclear weapons, climate change has no effect on this?
No. It's just humanity in general. It was started based on nuclear weapons. It has since expanded out to things like climate change, or in this case, they consider not only climate change, but autonomous weaponry. So, you know, drones and that kind of stuff that could wipe out human beings.
Nunchuck legalization.
The Matrix. All of these things.
How much of it is based off the technology or the current state of things versus like the political atmosphere?
Both. They have to take those both into account, right? Because if North Korea gets an ICBM, that has to change it, but also the relations of North Korea to their neighbors has to change it, right? Both of those things are part of the calculation you have to make. So this one was actually revealed by one of the current leads, which is Lawrence Krauss out of Arizona. We talk about him a lot and his Origins Institute. And they took everything into account. They looked at North Korea's nuclear program, discord between Russia and the United States, tensions in the South China Seas, the buildup of nuclear arsenals in Pakistan and India, and what might end up happening with the Iran nuclear deal. In doing all this, they put us to 2 minutes to midnight, which is the closest that we have been since basically the Cuban Missile Crisis. Those of you guys who are too young to know, that was basically when we almost had nuclear war with Russia. It was very close, very close. And they've kind of put us in that same position now. Now, this was back in January, so we're going to see that clock updated in about a month to see if we're going up or down. But in looking at everything, they have decided this. And you might think, what is the difference between this and when you see something on CNN where somebody's like, we're having a big problem, you know, the chicken littling, the sky is falling.
Bird flu.
Yeah, well, the difference is these aren't the random people that are on the news station. These aren't newscasters who got their job because they have a square jawline. These aren't even like the smartest guys in your high school class. These are the smartest guys who were probably lived in the state you lived in growing up, who then spent their entire lives studying this exact thing. These are literally the most informed people on these issues who set these things. And again, we talked about Lawrence Krauss, one of the most famous cosmologists. You are taking very smart people who are saying there is a big problem. And between nuclear war, between the political strife, between things like climate change and autonomous weaponry, we're in a dangerous place with a lot of potential to have a massive loss of life.
I see your point, but at the same time, you're discounting a lot of good general warnings. My local news guy didn't get his job because he has a square jaw. He got it because he has great tits.
It's very true.
And he has good advice.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary to think that that is the possibility. I would be interested to see what they do in about a month. Are they going to set this back or forward? Because I mean, quite frankly, I don't think we have as many tensions with Russia. I actually think it seems like our president's kind of really good friends with them. So maybe that's going to make it a little bit better. But there is some interesting tensions rising in China and other places.
North Korea is totally chilled out. I don't know what
you're talking about. That's right. Yeah, North Korea is like a metronome in terms of their attitudes. Like, love you, hate you. Love you, hate you.
Wild card. So are we placing bets on this? What do you think?
I tell you what. I bet you $1 million that the world doesn't blow up next year. And I can say that because if it does, I don't have to pay out.
San Diego was miraculously spared.
Dang it. That's okay. I'll make that million looting the rest of the world. I got a lot of good looting skills.
Yeah, with inflation, it'll just be a, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Of whatever, yeah.
Unfortunately, a huge markup on Fallout equipment meant that Bobby really didn't get too far in his looting.
Like I don't have plenty of Fallout equipment, asshole. Come on. All right.
They don't just call me Fallout Boy because I follow the band religiously.
Though I do. All right. And now on to the eighth most interesting science article of 2018. The oldest site in North America discovered, possibly the oldest site in all of the Americas, at least the oldest confirmed one, was discovered this year. So this came out in July of this year, was published in Science Advances. And it was a paper dating artifacts at one of North America's Paleo-Indian sites, the Galt site, which is part of the Buttermilk Creek complex. So this is a site about 40 miles north of Austin, Texas. Not necessarily the place you would expect to find the oldest currently dated site in North America, considering these people occupied the areas from the coast. But you do have to remember that when they were doing that, sea levels were much lower, meaning all those initial occupation areas along the coast are now deeply underwater. So some of the stuff that we're going to find is going to be inland. Before that, the oldest precise dates we'd had in North America, depending on who you asked, was either the Paisley Caves in Oregon, in which we had some coprolites that were dated at 14,500, or some of the stuff that is somewhat questionable around 15,000, actually on the East Coast, Topper and Cactus Hill. So we were dealing with some sites that we knew were kind of old. Now, Buttermilk Creek and the Galt site, we knew was old. It was a pre-Clovis site. So we had some stuff there that we knew was like 13 to 14,000 years old. However, they did some OSL, optical luminescence testing, and they were able to show that some of the layers, the early layers of parts of the Galt site, were at 16,500 to 20,000 years ago.
Layers of what?
In this case, it'd be lithic debitage mostly, so the remains of stone tools that they're making out there. One of the reasons this was such a good site, and by the way, one of the most interesting sites in all of the Americas, this site, the Buttermilk Creek Complex, because it was continuously occupied, we think, the entire time. That's the only site we know of in all of the New World that is continuously occupied. So we not only think we have occupation at 16 to 20,000 years old, but that it stayed occupied all the way up into modern times.
Must have been rent controlled.
It was not only that, but chert controlled, because they had a good source of high quality lithic chert around that you could make stone tools out of. It had a bunch of food resources around.
Can you describe lithic chert?
Oh, sorry. It's a fine grained metavolcanic rock that, because of the way it fractures, makes really good stone tools. We've been making stone tools out of chert and chert like rocks for probably close to about a million years or more. At this point, they're making complex projectile points and complex tools, and this chert is really, really high quality, meaning you can make really sharp, high quality, strong tools out of it.
I heard in this article that the natives, before it was called Buttermilk Creek, called it maize.
God damn it, no!
For defense!
This is before Teosinte was even domesticated! So very, very interesting for a few reasons. One is, if the old dates come back to be true, if it looks like they're getting something at 20,000 years old, that's amazing, because that's kind of where we think the earliest occupation in the Americas could be based on genetic evidence. Maybe even that might even be a little bit early. So this could really be some of the very first archaeological sites in all of the Americas. This could be it. Also interesting for another few reasons. One is, a few months later, some articles came out that somehow got way more publicity about the Buttermilk Creek site itself, which is about 250 meters away, and they found some spear points there that were dated at 15,000, and they go, the oldest weapons in the New World. And it's like, yeah, but a couple months ago, we had something that was much older published that happened to just be lithic debitage or whatever, so it's older, it's just down the creek a little bit. Why do we care that this happened to be a weapon? That seems so arbitrary. So between that and the fact that every time we get these articles, we always have the same intro, which is total bullshit. I want to talk to every single person who writes these archaeology articles, because they'll always say, you know, this really dispels the Clovis first theory. Now, you guys who have listened for a long time know why I hate this. Clovis first was this idea that the first occupants of the Americas were the Clovis people. They were around for a very limited time, 12,000 years ago. And for a while, we thought that the Clovis people were the first occupants of the Americas. That theory went out of favor in the 1980s. It stopped being accepted by anybody with any credentials whatsoever in the early 90s. Nobody thinks Clovis first is a real thing, and yet every one of these articles that ever finds a site older than Clovis says, wow, scientists are just absolutely flabbergasted by getting revealed that Clovis first isn't right. It would be, to translate, Nick, to your field of study, it would be the equivalent if they're like, hey, we just found out the universe isn't static. It's expanding. Who would have thought? It's dispelling the static universe theory.
It is fun to come to a science faction to get up to date on all my archaeologist pet peeves.
That's right. And you know what else I hate? Clay. It's a bitch to dig through.
If we let him keep going, he's going to turn into a rant about how big Clovis runs Washington. They run the textbook industry.
So that is one of those misreporting things that I always hate. And it's in every one of these articles. It's like clockwork that you can find the dumbest people. And I feel like there's just, every time a reporter looks this up, there is some bad source they have that says this, and they just repeat it over and over again. I feel like screaming from the rooftops, nobody has thought this for 35 fucking years.
As a representative of your field, what responsibility can you take? What have you guys done?
How many angry emails have you sent?
I swear to God, I'm going to spear one of these people with a Clovis point and be like, that is Clovis first. That is the only acceptable usage of it. I can make a pretty mean Clovis point too, so it'll work.
I was also just thinking these people, I guess they were not fresh off the boat. They were fresh off the land bridge.
Yes, exactly.
Strong legs.
On to the seventh most interesting article of 2018, a giant Maya city of millions of people that was completely unknown discovered in the jungles of Guatemala. Very interesting one. If you think of what it takes to support large-scale civilizations of literally millions. And when I say millions, we think it might be as many as 10 million people. So think about this. This was an area we thought was pretty much jungle. Now, we knew of archaeological sites around it. This is near Tikal and some other main Maya sites. What we thought was these were isolated sites. They're surrounded completely by jungle. And so they used a technology we've talked about here a little bit. It's called LIDAR. So think of radar, what they use radio waves for.
But it detects deception.
No. It's not like that. It's like radar, but it uses really strong pulses of light waves. And what these waves can do is essentially see through the trees and the foliage. So when you look at a LIDAR scan, you'll see the topography of the ground with absolutely no vegetation on it. It's amazing to see. So we fly these planes over with these LIDARs, and we get the signal back, and we do some post-processing, and we can see right through the trees as if they didn't exist. And when we did this, we found these areas near Tikal that we thought were just these isolated little city centers were actually part of this gigantic megapolis of multiple cities all linked together that are now completely covered by jungle in parts of Guatemala that, because of low occupation and everything, are essentially unoccupied.
So what you're saying is a lot of real estate.
Yes.
A lot of real fixer-uppers.
That's right.
A
lot of dragon temples.
There you go. A little digging here and there. You'll have a road and a sewage system, all sorts of good things.
They do. And that's exactly what we find. We find a lot of infrastructure. We find that they had these huge canals that took water from areas that we thought were uninhabitable because they were swamp areas. Turns out they had drained these swamps. They actually did it, unlike us.
And filled them with sewage.
Yeah. No, but they then took that water and they took it to arid areas and were able to farm. So they had basically urbanized this entire landscape, and we had no idea it was there. What's even funnier is this is a place where you have tourists, archaeologists, and everybody walking around because we have to call there and other Maya sites, and we didn't know that it was this big. This is similar to something we described, I think, in 2013 that we found also using LIDAR when we looked at Angkor Wat, the very famous archaeology site in Cambodia. We found that Angkor Wat was just the center of this huge complex that once we could see with LIDAR had channels and irrigation ducts and everything that supplied this massive population. So it starts changing the way we think of human populations. Remember, 95% of the natives or something like that of the Americas died out because of contact with Europeans. But the vast majority of them never saw a white person. They died because they got infected with diseases that spread much faster than individuals walked. So these people, you know, didn't know that Europeans had come here, but they died from their diseases. What does that mean? It means that you had entire areas that were completely evacuated and grown over by the time the nearest white person walked over there. So these mysteries are still out there. And what I think is most interesting isn't just that we found this megapolis of 10 million plus people, which, by the way, changes our estimates of how many people lived in the Americas at the time. Not only is that interesting and that it was right under our noses the entire time, what's really interesting is what this is going to do later on in South America. Watch this space. Because there were large-scale civilizations down in South America in the jungles of places like Brazil that, trust me, this is not accepted archaeology theory yet, but I am right. Trust me.
We want to trust you, but
there were large-scale civilizations down there that are only just now beginning to be discovered. We see these tantalizing clues popping out, but these are in heavily forested areas that aren't close to modern-day things, that aren't close to well-known areas that we haven't looked at yet, and that haven't had LIDAR surveys yet because nobody's flying planes out over there. So we are going to see with this technology the expansion of what we know about massive scale civilizations going on in Central and South America. It is very, very cool. It's good. I equate it to like the DNA technology of archaeological megalithic structures. You know, think of what we could do criminal wise before DNA and after DNA in terms of finding people. Think of what we can do now. That is what LIDAR is doing to megalithic archaeology right now.
You're right. We will be able to plunder artifacts, gold.
True. That is absolutely
much more efficiently.
There is a sad element of the fact that a lot of these places will now be looted that weren't before. But that is unfortunately something that comes along with this. But there is the other side to that, which is a lot of these areas, like the place in Guatemala, are being deforested at a very fast rate. Like almost all of the jungles in the Americas are. Well, now that we know these are there, we can now protect them. Whereas before, there are logging companies going through there, there's stuff going on. We now know these places need to be protected. Whether or not they do get protected is a different question, but we at least now know we need to. Whereas this stuff could very well be completely lost to us and to archaeologists and to researchers if it just gets overused.
I mean, this was once theoretically the best place to live in Guatemala. This city arose
yeah, sure.
because Couldn't we just give the city back to the Guatemalans? Go re-inhabit.
I mean,
go,
we didn't take it from them.
Go gentrify. Well, I mean, our diseases did.
That's true. This is just such a huge expansion of knowledge of what the Maya were doing in that area. It's absolutely amazing. It's really, really big in terms of Maya archaeology. It's changed what we know about Tikal, which is one of the most important Mayan sites. So if you're a Mayan researcher, this is huge, but mark my words, the real big thing is going to be coming when we start doing LIDAR surveys in the jungles of South America. That's going to really show us these civilizations that we didn't even know existed. And even some of the ones that we do, the Inca made their way into the tropics areas of Peru. There are plenty of sites that are undoubtedly covered up out there in the rainforest. And when we start doing stuff there, we're going to find those as well.
Speaking of archaeological pet peeves, how do you feel about the artist conceptions that are trying to depict these civilizations?
What do you mean?
Well, if you see an article, they show, you know, some sketch up of what it looked like when they lived there.
The ones that they do, like, you have to kind of be an expert to criticize those things, right? So, like, I'm an expert in San Diego Kumeyaay archaeology. The ones that I see are usually done by, like, an archaeologist who kind of knows what they're doing. What I always find is they're dated to the time in which they're made, right? So they're dated to the knowledge that we had in 1994 when this guy drew it. Now we know that he's mixing late prehistoric with archaic features and we wouldn't see that in the same site area.
Right.
So to that extent, they're inaccurate, but usually they're actually done by anthropologists and they're fairly accurate.
Because I am trying to imagine what this grand civilization would look like. Who's around, walking the streets, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, they're short people. We know that. The Mayans were generally pretty short. They're like average, like 5'2" or 5'3".
They were normally being carried by an Aztec warrior.
Right, on the side of a van.
Traditionally.
Yeah. But beautiful temples, huge megalithic architecture, beautifully carved. Some of the stuff at Tikal is amazing. One of my undergrad professors was one of the leading archaeologists doing some of those Mayan sites. And they have really cool stuff where on the equinox, these dragon statues, the shadow will stretch across the entire temple floor and look like there's a fucking dragon coming out. There is really cool stuff.
Yeah, we need to get back on that.
Yeah, why don't we do cool stuff with the equinoxes anymore?
Bullshit Christmas.
All right, and the last one for this particular episode, the sixth most interesting science article of 2018, CRISPR babies.
Delicious.
They are, absolutely. A little barbecue sauce.
Oh, can I just guess, made in China?
Correct. So this was a story, of course, that we covered here on Science Faction. It was revealed in November, and I can't, if you guys are saying, oh, really? Well, you've listed the journal articles on the last one. If you remember, this one was not written up in a formal science journal. This was released through the Associated Press. So this is a researcher, a Chinese researcher, who, quote-unquote, on his own time, during a sabbatical, did some CRISPR modification of human embryos to be born, which is not only never been done before, against the ethical violations of essentially every biological professional group and organization in the world. So we have this rule where you can indeed do some CRISPR research on embryos, but you have to terminate those embryos after 14 days, so they can never come to term. The reason is we don't want to introduce changes to the germline that haven't been seen before that can then propagate through people. You can get CRISPR genetic modification in certain countries, and it's not necessarily illegal. That's to your body. That's not changing your gametes, your sperm or your egg, so it doesn't change the line down the road.
Unless you inject it specifically in that area.
Yeah, unless you're going for the balls, right? I want them huge!
I want this injection to be painful!
What this guy did is he actually altered these embryos in such a way that because he's altering the embryos themselves, this will pass down through their germlines. Their eggs will be altered because these happen to both be female. If they were male, their sperm would be altered. So he has permanently altered the human genetic line. It was a big no-no, and when the information came out, the entire international community came out in an uproar and was like, what the fuck are you doing?
How easy is it to get a hold of some embryos?
Not that hard.
I mean, like Amazon?
Yeah. Well, I mean, every person doing IVF, right? They have it there. He's a researcher. He's a biologist. He was technically on sabbatical, but it's not that hard to get that kind of stuff, you know? And as we discussed, you can order home CRISPR kits. CRISPR is not at all hard to get a hold of.
Maybe I'm not picturing this right, but one guy with access to a sophisticated lab could do this on a sabbatical? Like, this doesn't require a team of people? No. I don't have to...
No, you don't even need that sophisticated a lab.
It's like, I'm going to take some time off and go write a book and clone a kid.
The hard part is having the base knowledge to know what you're doing. So it's not Nick's field where, you know, you're going to need a really complicated telescope to be able to see something, right? It's more like, once the data comes in, if you understand how to use and manipulate it, that's all you need.
Yeah, you got to know which genes to mess around
with. Yeah, exactly. And so he said, okay, well, I'm going to try this thing where I'm going to use this gene variant that makes people essentially immune to HIV. So I'm going to use this to see, because there are people in sub-Saharan Africa who the mother has HIV and the kids are going to be born. So if we can alter them to not be susceptible to HIV, then they won't catch it, which sounds great on the surface, but it's a total bullshit argument. And here's why. We can use drugs. We can use certain suppressant drugs to help those babies be born without HIV. So that is not really a need for it. And also, those people in sub-Saharan Africa, it's much easier to get them those antiretroviral drugs than it is to do genetic modifications to their in utero fetuses. These aren't people who are getting IVF treatments. That's not how, it's not going to be an easy transformation there. That's a silly concept. And then secondarily, the person he tried it on, it was actually a set of twins for this Chinese woman. The woman didn't have HIV. These kids weren't at risk of getting HIV from being born.
But she was an intravenous drug user with
she was hoping to get it. So it was kind of Frankenstein-y experiments for experiment's sake. And one of the things people said was, hey, man, this is really easy to mess up. CRISPR is a pretty precise tool, but precise relative to things. And you're fucking around with the DNA. You could make a mistake. Lo and behold, about a month after the story came out, we found out he did. So one of the twins that were produced from this process did have the variant he was trying to give, basically immunity to HIV. The other one...
Super HIV.
No, the other one has a genetic mutation now, an induced genetic mutation that we have never seen in human beings. So he induced a mutation that we already knew about in this one woman, in one of the embryos. In trying to do the same thing in both embryos, he actually messed up and induced something that we've never seen before, the effects of which we have no idea what they'll be.
Did the mother know about this?
Yes.
She was in on it.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you trust. He's a university professor, of course. You know, he's telling you he's going to do something funny. And
I know better by now.
Yeah. By the way, there is a third embryo he's announced is coming to term as well, that we don't know who has it or what the genetic mutation is, but there is somebody else he has done this to already.
Okay, now, are you willing to speculate that the Chinese government had any sort of blessing? Thumbs up, like, hey, we won't prosecute you. You go ahead and do this.
Okay, so they either did or they got really pissed about what he did because he has since disappeared. So that gentleman is no longer contactable or around. That could be
because... Or he's doing it en masse in a lab.
It could be because the Chinese government was like, why the fuck did you draw so much attention to this? Why did you tell the AP? He literally put out a press release. Why did you tell them you knew this was going to be a big problem? Don't fuck around like this. You didn't get our permission. Or they said, hey, we told you you could do this, but you had to keep your fucking mouth shut. Why are you telling people about this? In either case, that motherfucker's gone.
I have follow-up appointments. Where's my doctor?
It will almost certainly have long-lasting effects. The genie is out of the bottle. We are now in the CRISPR modification age. We entered it in November of this year. We are now in the age which our children will live in which embryos are altered through CRISPR in one way or another.
This kid could be unfuckable. I mean, you don't know that this kid will be able to breed.
Well, one of them at least, again, has a normal genetic variant that we know of. So yes, she will be fine. She will be totally, as you say, fuckable.
But it's hard to look at a child and know how fuckable the adult will be. That is a Confucius saying.
Well, this is where we're getting into, right? It's designer babies where you can make them, you know, very attractive or with wings or webbed toes, all sorts of fun things.
And there's some parts of that that are obviously a good thing. If we can get rid of Huntington's disease in a kid who is going to otherwise have a horrible death when they turn 40, yeah, absolutely. We should start looking into that. If we can get rid of genetic
stupidity.
Genetic anomalies. If we can stop trisomy 23, if we can stop things that are otherwise going to be really painful or hurtful to them, we absolutely should. The problems become, what are the ethical implications? How far do you take it? Who gets access to it? Does everybody have equal access to this? Well, no, it's usually the rich people first. So is that a problem? If you think about it, one of the biggest imbalances in our society isn't even racial or gender or anything else. It's intelligence. Having a much higher IQ puts you in a very different position in our societies. That's a huge advantage. If you're wealthy enough to imbue that advantage upon your children, especially because we know there's so many genes for IQ, that if you could pick and choose, you could probably make somebody who was so substantially smarter than their peers that their advantages in society would be gigantic. And if the first generation of people who get access to that are only the children of the very, very wealthy, that's a recipe for oligarchy, you know? So
because that's not what's happening now. So.
Well, somewhat, but a lot of times there's turnover in that, right? There, we do have some problems with the slide towards our oligarchy, but there are some fail safes in the way. There
well, right.
is
well, one the fail safes, right, is that you have a you might be more you know intelligent and sure. better placed in society, but that doesn't necessarily make you better at breeding.
Sure.
So it you know,
but pretty soon
we go full idiocracy, right?
We might not be breeding at all. You know, like in the near future, it might be that everything is done in this IVF sort of way.
I believe in the future where America has socialized medicine, where Americans, regardless of your social class or status, not just the top 1 or 2%, can afford genetic modifications and perhaps superpowers.
So remember November of 2018? That is literally the time that the world entered the CRISPR human modification era. That is the time in which our children will live, our grandchildren will live. I happen to think that at a certain point, it will become unethical not to modify your kids. It will become unethical the same way it is to not take your kids to preschool or give them every advantage you can. If you sit there and say, my junk genetics mixed with my wife's junk genetics in a random way through to meiosis and mitosis are going to be what produces my kid, you'll be negligent as a parent. It'd be similar to in the early 1900s, if you left your kids at home to go off to work, you were a great parent because those kids weren't in a coal mine at that moment, right? Nowadays, if you leave your kids to go off to work, you'll go to jail. It's almost a similar thing. Like, we up the ante over and over again. And at some point, you could make an argument that if your kid has the possibility of having a genetic disease and you are not actively trying to suppress it, you're a piece of shit parent. And that point started in November of 2018.
Jane Sanders and I made love in a coal mine once.
How was it?
It was terrible, but we agreed that until coal miners are able to make love in beds, Jane and I will have sex in the coal mine.
All right, guys. So those are 6 of the top 11 science stories of 2018. You're going to have to come back this Thursday to hit the next 5. But thank you for coming back for Science Faction 288, where you learned about how opiate deaths are changing the demographics of the United States, how there are no true Europeans, why the doomsday clock moves ever closer to midnight, what the oldest archaeological site in North America is, how a giant Mayan city of millions of people was discovered out of nowhere, and how we just entered the age of CRISPR babies. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back this Thursday for Science Faction 289.
Damn four men coming into our country, kissing all women's lady parts.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.